Welcome back to season two of Quest Laid Plans, the podcast that asks the question, can an old party learn new tricks? We're back for season two. I am Megan Kelleher, your dungeon master, and with me are five alternate versions of me from parallel universes things are just a little bit weird and wacky.
Why would you start with that?
I asked Netta if we should start with a normal one, and they said, no, let's do a silly one. So here's a silly one.
Cool, cool, cool.
And I'm throwing Netta under the bus. A great way to start season two. Just throw the producer under the bus.
Start with these vibes.
Did not come here to make friends.
I'm first, aren't I? Wow. Remembering how to do this. Hi, I'm Maya S. Ming, and I play Windswept Palm, the Rune Knight Air Genasi Gnome Fighter. And I exist in a universe where Megan was part of a Rodgers and Hammerstein group in college instead of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Ew, can you imagine? What losers would I have met there?
Oh my god.
Hi, I'm Phil Arevalo playing Kit Marpala Water Genasi Monk, and I'm from a universe where Megan has never colored her hair.
Whoa. Wild.
Special.
It's so soft and healthy. It's like
luscious,
it's like the texture
long
it's,
curls.
It's supposed to be, yeah. It's moist as hell, yeah.
What is up? It's your human boy, golden boy, just a little fuck boy, Megan, sliding into your DMs in this one. Esther Miffiance, sorcerer, hello.
Who the fuck are you? Say your name.
Oh, I'm Jesse.
I was like, is Esther sliding into Megan's DMs?
Or... No, no, no,
no. I think
is
Megan, am sliding into your DMs because I'm fuck boy Megan.
I see, I got it. I get it. Yep.
I mean, Esther is sliding into everyone's DMs.
God, I wish.
No. Esther's not on Instagram.
Esther will send you a pigeon.
Yeah.
Real old school. I am Jamie Rose Hathaway, playing your Kalashov Wildfire Druid, Aveline Every Skywatcher, and insert dick dick noises here, Addy. I am from a universe where Megan is tone deaf.
Oh, unfathomable.
How do I make money?
Good question. You work in STEM.
you're in STEM. Hard science pivot. No music. You love it, but you can't make it.
That's so sad.
And speaking of things that are sad, hi, I'm Neda Marie Vochva, and I play your halfling wizard rogue Naraya Windsworn, and I am Megan from a universe in which she likes dogs better than cats.
Okay, so now we get to kill one of them. No, I'm just kidding.
I thought you were like a dog. I was like, whoa.
No, I do like cats better than dogs, but I wouldn't hurt one. I like them just fine, but cats have my heart.
Aw.
It's a great way to start the podcast. Just like, what if it's just 2 hours of me talking about cats? We open season two, approximately 6 to 8 weeks after the events of season one, and we are all gathered together at the home of Esther Miffiance, sorcerer, in the exurbs of the city of Skylark. So we're not quite in an urban environment. Jesse, I'll let you tell us what you think that Esther's little townhouse, like, suburban, exurban fantasy is. But I will say that no matter what kind of house you end up deciding, the one thing I will say is that there are a lot of full floor-to-ceiling windows that overlook this absolutely gorgeous view of the city of Skylark, the city of reflections, so named because every single building is full mirror. It's just light everywhere. And the other thing about it, besides that, its other defining feature, is that there's trees everywhere and plants that interweave between the buildings and through them and move with the buildings throughout the day to face the sun. And so watching it, you could just sit and watch it all day, and you probably have. It's a pretty spectacular view, and you can see the whole thing. It overlooks a lake, which is obviously shining very brightly with all this reflected light. And at night, you can see amazing, colorful lights lighting up the trees and reflecting off the buildings, and it's truly breathtaking. But you're not in the city right now. You're in Esther's little home, slightly away from home. Jesse, what is this house like?
Yeah, so I think this house is, as you said, a little on the outskirts of town, a little hidden away. A lot of the trees of Skylark are sort of long, kind of like almost white birch trees. And I think this house is sort of like a little M.C. Escher-ish, where like it's kind of warped into the trees, the layout of it. Like, it's not just kind of like a normal rectangular house, but maybe a little more like Swedish or like this kind of bizarre structure. There's probably like three or four levels to the house. A lot of like big glass windows. I think it's maybe like the design is very like white trees. Yeah, I think a really sleek design that I think in some angles almost like blends and disappears into the trees and the landscape around it.
Very cool. Now, the six of you, including Brex, have gathered here in anticipation of the Miphians Gala, a large celebration, very swanky, happening in Skylark 1 week from now, to which you are all invited as guests of honor, although it's not about you, it's about this huge announcement that is rumored to happen. It's not listed anywhere official, but everybody knows, and it's kind of the official, unofficial gossip of the city is, what is this huge announcement going to be? You hear people talking about it on the streets. Certainly, Esther, as a Miphian, you know, you received little communications like, oh, I heard this rumor, it would be a shame if somebody were to spread it. So we're all anticipating that. Now, you've all been invited. You're all here. I won't presume that you're all going to go. You're actually all gathered here after a period of, you know, each of you having this time to kind of do whatever you want and need to do following the confrontation of last season. And I would be curious to hear what everybody did in the past, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or so. Let's start in the same order we introduce ourselves at the beginning of the show. Maya.
Sure. Yeah. That seems fair. No, it's all good.
Actually, maybe we can go in reverse order. That is more fair. Netta.
Oh, okay. Well, what Naraya did for the past month and a half or so was she traveled west and kind of tried to figure out some wizard shit. Looked for some information because having processed what we went through in the past, whenever we last met a couple months ago, I think once she calmed down a little, she would have figured out that Porla was fucking with some real serious magic that was, you know, new and dangerous. So I think all Naraya has been doing is kind of pulling strings with academia and wizard people and just kind of trying to covertly figure out as much as possible about all of this research and where it happened and how it happened. Probably contacted the university where Porla went and just kind of asked around a little to varying degrees of success. And I think I've been staying in Skylark for like a week now, still just doing mostly just the archival and academic parts of being a wizard, the less exciting shit, the sitting in a library for 17 hours just reading and cramming and regaining wizard levels in the process. It's been solitary and a lot on the brain, but we're getting somewhere.
Great. Aveline, what about you?
Enjoying that Naraya has just gone back to grad school, basically, for a month. just auditing some classes. Yeah, Aveline has also had to travel back west from Dawnlight to the village that she's been living in for the last 5 or so years to get everything kind of ready for going off on some new adventures. She's got responsibilities back in Altona, which, if we're going by a Fantasy Canada rules, is kind of out in the prairies. So yeah, they've been back checking in with Sunna, the kind of grandmother slash landlady of the healer's spot slash glassblowing forge that they've kind of lived into over the last, and basically just like has had to do the equivalent of hiring like a locum doctor while they're gonna be on a leave of absence. Being like, okay, I was away for a weekend. It turned into a lot more of an adventurous weekend than I expected, and I'm gonna be gone for a little while, so, you know, arranging a fantasy sublet. And also taking some time to kind of go into the forest and scream and set some shit on fire, because this whole thing has brought up a lot of feelings for Aveline about Chiron and the past, and she needs to go and throw some fireballs at some rock walls and leveling up kind of mana, gain some more wildfire druid skills, adult responsibilities, and yelling at the sky.
Awesome. Jesse, what has Esther been up to?
Well, I think that there's two things that Esther would like to do. The first is, I think after this very long weekend, Esther, and this is something that, you know, we can speak out, the whole group can discuss as we figure out how we're gonna sort of handle the fallout of this weekend. But I think Esther would speak to the guild and sort of offer his PR resources and as a way of helping sort of smooth over any, just the sort of fallout from this weekend, and whatever the group does decide, we are going to tell the world of what's happened, and to sort of, if there is sort of the guild is in a state of sort of chaos, because feasibly the sort of top three leaders of the school are all gone. So I think Esther would be as sort of as much as possible be there as a advisor and sort of offer, even if it is also to the extent of like offering some like financial support for the any repairs that need to happen, or just this sort of school getting back on path. And then I think the second thing is, yeah, he would head back to his townhouse. And I think the like Mithian's gala, I think it happens every year. And Esther knew that the gala was like coming up pretty quickly after this reunion. And maybe even every year, every member of our party receives an invite, because it's like this big gala, like in the sense that like we are celebrities. So like every celebrity is invited to this thing. And of course, nobody has come for the last 10 years. But Esther, like, really believing, I think something's happened. There's a high possibility everyone is going to come. I think went back to his townhouse and did some, like, major renovations on it to make it this, like, feasible place. Because maybe beforehand, it was kind of, like, dark, depressing bachelor pad energy. No paintings on the wall. Just, like, not, like, messy, but just, like, void of, like, love or, like, any welcoming energy. So I think Esther, like, went home and hired some very quick-working renovators to, like, turn this into a very, like, welcoming home in time before his friends would start showing up.
I'm just laughing because, like, you went on this whole spiel, and I'm just like, wow, I'm really picturing Esther, like, putting on his little painter overalls and, like, getting to work. And then you were like, so he hired people to fix it.
Yeah, he hired a cook, too, because there's no way Esther is making the meals.
He realized he'd been living with just, you know, like one kind of gray towel.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
Was like, I'm sending someone out to buy six sets of nice guest towels,
right.
With like,
yeah,
the big one, the medium one, the hand towel, being like, this is absolutely the way I've always lived.
Absolutely. And I've always only needed...
Wait for the Patreon episode where Esther gets queer-eyed for his for his house.
I was thinking more Chip and Joanna Gaines for this one.
There's a lot of shiplap in this house, yeah. A lot of reclaimed wood.
Everything is just, like, specific to the other members of the party. Like, yeah, I've always had just six towels. Like, that's the normal amount. Funny coincidence that it fits for all of you so well. That's crazy.
Aveline shows up and is like, oh, wow, this, like, red and teal towel set that matches my color scheme.
I know. That's so random. But yeah, by all means.
I can't believe you've had that for 6 years when I only, like, started really wearing teal, like, 5 years ago.
I know. You know,
checks
it kinda
out.
Goes with this bedroom that I certainly haven't had any need for that matches those colors. So if you want to hang out in there. Oh, look, there's a little bed for Addie, too. That's so weird. I can't believe that's just been sitting there.
Can Addie sleep in a normal bed being made of fire or?
What? The bed's fire resistant? That's so random. It's a bed made of coals. That's so weird.
It's just a really nice one of those like fireplaces. The like
it's a grill.
The like square
it's
black
grill.
Ones
it's
that
a
you
grill.
Can.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really nice grill.
You know, she's a spirit.
George who, like... Foreman grill that she sleeps inside. Canon done. No one change it.
It's a bed. It's just a bed. These are how beds are made in Skylark.
We all sleep inside grills. Well, great. Now I have to incorporate that into my world. Awesome. Is that what you wanted to say? Am I cutting you off too early? Or?
No, I think that's it. But yeah, and then just maybe Esther has still been like in contact with the guild, just keeping tabs on them.
All right, Kit, what have you been up to?
So I think Kit's home is like kind of on the other side of the world from where we are. So he decides that he wants to go to the university where Porla had studied. He has a couple of goals. One goal is to see if he can go to the library and kind of do a little bit of research more directly, I think, than Nariah would. But his excuse for being there, he also realizes that part of his purpose of the weekend was to recruit people for the monastery, and he has failed miserably at this.
Oh, no.
So he decides that he's just going to try at the university now, and he's pitching a six week mindfulness class for everybody. And he writes back to Sampa, his life partner, and says, things have changed over this weekend. It's been kind of ridiculous. I need to stay here because we're going to this thing in Skylark. I'm going to try recruiting at the university. I'll be staying with Chiron's family. Oh yeah. And if you need to reach me, you can write to them. And during his mindfulness class, he decides to sort of like take Cabriel along if he wants to come, and has Cabriel like compose meditation music for this class.
I was literally sitting here for the last 2 minutes thinking like, please let there be an opportunity for Cabriel to play those little bowls.
Yes.
Please.
Yes. No,
please.
He has a hand. No, bells. You know what? It's a handpan. That's what it is.
Yes.
Yes. That's what he's going to play.
It's like those magic frequencies that put you to sleep.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
And
ooh, a sound bath? Is it a sound bath? It's a sound bath with Cabriel.
I'm also imagining the episode of Parks and Rec where Chris takes Ron. He's like, oh, yes, clearing my mind. Cabriel is just like, his himbo energy makes him deeply...
No, his mind is clear.
Yeah,
right?
His mind is clear all the time.
Totally already there.
Mind clearing. Yeah.
And, if your head stays empty, you don't have to get empty.
Exactly.
Megan,
and I think...
You're always saying that.
He is like what people aspire to reach after like years of meditative study. He's just... Zen.
Yeah, full Nirvana himbo. Yeah.
And that's exactly it. And the last thing is that in this time that Kit spends with Cabriel, Cabriel's like vast clarity of mind reminds Kit of techniques that he learned but forgotten. And so as he goes up to level 10, he relearns purity of body, which is a monk feature that lets him be resistant or immune, right, to disease and poison. Thanks, Cabriel.
Oh, man. It's a pleasure, Kit, to teach you how to be immune to all diseases. Through song.
Through song.
All right, Windswift, last but not least, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so it's funny to me that, like, a bunch of us just went, like, we're going full nerd on this post-reunion break because Windswift... Well, okay, so I will say, in addition to... her nerdy proclivities that I'm about to describe. She's also wants to be like making gains because people are floating the idea of like, we're going to be adventurers and mercenaries again. And she's like, oh yeah, I gotta, you know, get back into shape then. I gotta really, you know, and like, she's gotta be careful with her knee. And so of course she's taking that into consideration, but I think she's like, back to like an everyday workout regimen kind of thing, just doing her little gnome push-ups and pull-ups and stuff.
Like, you look full Rocky on the steps, but like, it takes a while because you're small, but like, yeah,
yeah, it's just three steps, but it's like long. It's a super long montage of Winslet running up and down.
Each step is like its own sprint initially.
And oh, then, yeah.
Well, she's got, I was going to say, she's got two different workouts for when she's small and when she's big. Yes. So nice. She also has to, and I would say that she also probably doesn't, what makes it a little difficult, she doesn't go home because that she lives in, she's been living in a mountain town, and it's also, I imagine, pretty far away from Skylark, and yeah, so she's just trying to like fit in whatever works, like using her environment to just kind of adapt to, you know, her sort of body weight exercises. But I think she's also going to this university where Porla went, but her kind of angle is going to be documenting and researching everything about dinosaurs, because all of the dramatics aside, you know, once she had time to kind of process what they all went through, she was like, that was like a whole new like creature that we'd only been somewhat aware of through her mother's like explorations and whatnot. And that like adds to our understanding of the previous world that we now occupy. And I fought one and I killed one. And so am I just like the world's leading dinosaur expert now? ?
I killed it, so I'm an expert.
The world's leading dinosaur expert, parentheses, killed one.
Is that what it takes? I don't know.
No one else has killed a dinosaur for millions of years. So, you know. World's leading dinosaur assassin.
You're basically a meteor.
Being a big meteor, you know. But I mean, before she, you know, tries to like actually claim that title, she wants to go. And I mean, because Porla did confer, I guess, with Quaris during the course of her necromancy studies. So she's just wanting to see what else is out there and figures that that's a good place to start. But she's also just like taking notes on everything that they discovered during the reunion weekend about Quaris, everything that Porla said to them. She probably interviewed those of you who had the visions of Quaris's like point of view, which I think was like Aveline and Kit, and just takes notes on that. So she's just trying to be the best like documenter possible, and it's like definitely 100% her own interest and study, and not a way to impress her cool mom when she sees her next. Definitely 100%. That's the motivation. And she also spends a little time also in the interest of being in the study mindset, in the gains mindset. She goes back to one of her older runes that she hadn't practiced with, and so she now has use of a fire rune, which does some additional cool damage, and we'll see if that comes into play. So I won't describe it because it might be cool.
Hell yeah. All right, well, it sounds like we've all had an eventful several weeks, and now we're all back in the same place. Gosh, I didn't tell you what Brex did. Brex didn't tell you what Brex did. Brex doesn't.
Of course he didn't.
He was like, none of your fucking business.
I mean, if anyone's gonna know what Brex did, it would be Nariah.
Nariah did a sending spell to Brex at some point and was like, hey, just checking in. How are you doing? I'm doing this and this and this in 25 words. And the response was just, none of your fucking business.
Yeah, when pressed, Brex will say that they were watering their flowers, but that's all they will say. So, we are back at the townhouse, and I think that you've probably all been back for a few days. I don't know if you all arrived at the same time, but I think you've been all together for maybe like 2 days at this point. And there's been a lot of, you know, catching up. There's been a bit of exploration of the city. There is a streetcar that does run from relatively near Esther's neighborhood into the city. So you're able to go and explore a little bit. You're able to walk around the parks and see these incredible trees that move and shift, and the leaves can light up and display these messages, "Welcome to the park." As you walk through the streets, you see there are people on bikes and people in carts. And when a giant palm leaf shifts from red to green, they all go from stopped to going. And at night, there is this beautiful show in the center of town where there's all these cacti and succulents. The needles of the cacti all light up in waves of color, and it's this beautiful artistic installation. There's tons of arts and culture here. Everything is squeaky clean, super walkable, super transit friendly, kind of an ideal city to just hang out with your friends. And as you are, you know, going around getting ice cream and, you know, watching animals, you know, eat these funny leaves and then poop out rainbow poops and then run away. But you are consistently, not 100% of the time, but fairly consistently aware of people in the streets kind of clocking you, kind of looking at you, whispering with their people. Occasionally you catch a stray word of, "Porla, disappear, blah, blah, blah." Like, "Oh, what, I don't know, what do you think?" And you're becoming aware that people are starting to talk, and that if you listen, you can kind of get the sense that people are not sure exactly what happened that weekend. And you're starting to get the sense that if you're gonna go to this gala, you're going to need a story. You're going to need a united front. And after a few days of cavorting and catching up, there's sort of this like elephant in the room of, we do need to have this unpleasant conversation at some point about what we tell the world, about what happened that weekend. Are you there, Questies? It's me, Megan. It's so good to be back. We have been working so hard for so long on this season, and I cannot believe we are finally sharing with you. It's an amazing feeling. Thank you so much for joining us for season two. And we want to give a special shout out to a couple of really cool artists that we've been lucky enough to work with. First of all, we want to thank Aki for creating our beautiful season two character art, which you haven't seen yet. You're going to see next episode, but we want to, you know, hype it up, get psyched. You're not ready. And we also want to thank the incredible Teo for doing the album cover art for season two, which like blew our minds when we saw it. So both of their socials and contact info and stuff are in the show notes in case you want to commission them or just go ogle all of their amazing art. So another place you can view this art and also listen to full episodes and find out more about the cast and crew is at our newly refurbished website, questlateplans.com. And if you want to go to questlateplans.com/discord, you can get a key to join our Discord and hang out with the cast and crew and also your fellow questies. Another way to get a key is bit.ly/questlatediscord. And also, of course, we have Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are questlateplans. Finally, we're so lucky that we got to commission these amazing artists that I mentioned before and also, you know, compensate our cast and crew as much as we possibly can. And that's all possible because of y'all and your generosity. And so if you want to support the show and you haven't already, you can check us out at patreon.com/questlateplans. And there's some bonus content on there and also more to come. And you can become a free member also. But another way to support us for free would be to give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and spread the word to your friends. So that is all I have for now. I cannot wait to share the rest of the season with you guys. But yeah, for now, enjoy the rest of the episode.
Yeah, so I think it's maybe the night or two nights before the gala. And we've, like, had dinner and kind of had this, like, lovely large meal. And then I have asked Orlando, my chef, to prepare a dessert. And it just so happens that he prepares these small dessert dishes that is each of y'all's favorite dessert. So I think maybe we're like sitting outside by the fire pit or something, maybe a roof deck. And Orlando has just come out with this tray of lovely decadent desserts. Well, thank you so much, Orlando. That will be all for tonight.
You're very welcome, sir.
What are you getting up to tonight, Orlando? You can have to take the night off.
I don't know. I kind of prefer to keep work and personal life separate.
Okay, I can respect that.
We stand a chef with boundaries.
You have a good night, everyone. Enjoy the dessert.
Thanks, Orlando. Thanks for making what seems to be an entire marbled cheesecake that I haven't had in 5 years. That's really impressive.
You're very welcome.
And you like cheesecake, Winslet?
Yeah, actually I do.
That's awesome.
It's one of my favorites, but I don't think I'd had it much since going back to the mountains, so it's really amazing. And, like, to have this specific marbled pattern that I, like, remember the last time I was in a big city is, like, wow, it really brings back memories.
Well, I love tiramisu, so I'm just gonna dive into this little pot here. Well, so just to be frank, these galas are going to be 150 of me, more or less. So,
I told Chiron's parents.
Told them about Esther's gala? All of it?
I told them. It's clear that we all don't really know how to tell people about what happened to Porla.
Yeah, because we don't know what happened to Porla.
No, we don't. I was staying with Chiron's parents. They asked me. I told them that we didn't know what happened to her and that she had disappeared. I told them we went to another weird plane. I told them, but I didn't tell them that Porla was behind the whole thing.
Good.
They know.
Kit, what gave you the right to say that?
I didn't know what to do. They were...
Well, then why were you staying with them in the first place?
What do you mean, why was I staying with them in the first place?
If you went and stayed with them, obviously something was going to come up. I thought we were agreeing that we were going to wait to all talk about it before we made this decision. I think the decision, what you said is we can work with that, but what gives you the right to just say... To give this information?
I mean, it's Chiron's parents, Esther. Who deserves to know more?
If anything, they're used to bad news. I don't think you can surprise them with.
I just liked for us all to have come to a decision.
I think we should all talk about this now that clearly everyone expects us to have some sort of fucking official thing. I think Kid did about as good as he could have done with having to have given them some information, because it's true, we did go somewhere, we did fight something, that much is clear. I think everyone knows something about that. And I think just saying, oh, she disappeared, is kind of fair because that's what we know, right? Like, none of us know if she's dead.
There was no body, she just vanished. But
she could have just fucking teleported. She could have been like, oh, I have this, like, big thing and now I'm giving up for the greater good. And she could have just, like, gone off to fucking, I don't know, somewhere else. And she's just, like, on a beach somewhere. We don't know.
Yeah.
So to clarify, Kit did or did not tell Chiron's parents about the Porlocoris thing.
Did they know there was a dinosaur?
Wait, no. So what Kit told them was that we somehow, while investigating what happened with the Remoras, ended up in another plane, all of a sudden, out of nowhere. We fought something that we'd never seen before, and afterwards Porla disappeared. That's what I told them.
I also want to clarify that, like, you know, since Windswift has been taking notes on dinosaurs, that, like, at no point has she been sharing that. It's mostly just been, like, documenting for the sake of actually having a reference point. But I she might even pipe up now in the middle of this conversation, just be like, well, yeah, I mean, we really do need to talk about it. And I understand. I understand why we don't really know what to do about Porla, but the implications of the thing that we fought, it has, we have to decide what to do about that, because I have all these notes about what happened, and I don't know. They're a really important part of, like, our world's history, I think, Aquarius is. But obviously, I'm not gonna like just publish this. It needs a lot of editing for one thing, and I'm still doing research. But I mean, we just need to. I don't know. We need to figure out what to do when we're a part of history.
Here's my question, though. Obviously, a very big thing from history from the distant past. It's interesting that creatures like Quarus used to exist, right? That's interesting and important. I think that's separate from this particular entity was trying to come back and reclaim something. I think those are two separate things. And I think telling the world about archaeological discovery is perfectly fine. I'm not convinced that we have to tell everyone that this ancient thing ended up fucked up and corrupted and wanted a way back. Because if anything, that might stop people from wanting to research the rest of them. Right? Because you wouldn't want to bring back more of them, right?
Right, but they also, the only reason we know any of this is because one of them reached out and used magic from the world to talk to somebody.
But we don't know if Chorus was different than any of these other dinosaurs, right? Like, they could all be the same.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to distract from what we actually need to talk about. Like, this is a longer, like, that's a whole, like, scholarly discourse or whatnot. But I do think we need to know, does Porla have a place in the history that we share with others? Porla's part in it, because she is part of it. And we're the only ones who know.
And we have to say something, because people know that she's gone. You know, she was kind of a big deal, and she just disappeared. And whether we tell everyone that she died heroically fighting this thing that was threatening the guild super dramatically, or if we say that she kind of went mad with grief and then turned around, like, we need to say something.
It's not the dinosaurs part that actually worries me the most. It's the necromancy.
Yeah.
I didn't tell Chiron and Gabriel's parents about that. And if there's anything that we leave out, getting out is absolutely horrifying to me. If it took someone like Corla,
I would argue
I
died like zero times back when everyone thought there was no necromancy, and then, you know, when people knew there was necromancy, I did die. I'm inclined to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I've been trying to look into it, and it's a lot of, what is it? I don't want to say dark magic, because that has implications that we don't need to get into. I do not think whatever our statement is on this particular event that happened on this one day, I think the scientific and arcane implications of the shit she was meddling with have to be separate. We have to have a statement of, hey, here's what happened, vaguely. And then eventually we unravel the rest of it, because it's... Imagine you're a stranger on the street, right? The guy we saw at the ice cream store, and you're like, oh, those are people that used to fight things. One of them's missing. And we're like, hey, here's a creature that used to exist and roam the land and wants to kill you. And also this shitty magic that you thought was a myth is real and dangerous. Have a good day. How do you go on from that?
Yeah, that would break Doug. He's a good guy, too, so.
Yeah. I'm sure he's lovely.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, Kit, what you said, you handled yourself well.
Esther, you know how I am under pressure. So you don't need to sugarcoat it.
Well, surprisingly, you sounded like you said everything all right. And, I mean, you're going to be a wreck tomorrow. But it sounded like you got through that okay enough. Did anything with the statue and Gabriel come up?
I didn't say anything about that.
I think it's perfectly fine if there's unanswered parts of it in whatever statement we come up with. If the statement is, y'all saw the attack at the ceremony, and then with the fence being down, something else dragged us into this demiplane, we fought it, we're not sure what it was, which is perfectly fine. People fight things that are weird all the time. I think it's fine to just be like, hey, we fought a monster, and in this combat, Porla disappeared, and we're not sure where she is, because that leaves us room for if she resurfaces, because again, we don't know if she's dead.
Well then, if I were a stranger on the street, I would probably ask, are you looking for her? And we're not.
We're not. I mean, we could. If we wanted to figure out, we could try to reach out. There are spells that could technically reach out across planes, so if she's whisked herself off to somewhere else, we could still figure out if she exists somewhere. I personally don't care to do that, me as a person, but I would lend my magic to it if we needed that. But I think it's perfectly fine to just be like, one of us is missing, we don't know where, we can't reach her, but we did not see her die. We have not seen her go down.
We could say she died.
Or missing presumed dead.
Could say the monster ate her. I would be perfectly fine, personally, with saying the monster ate her.
I mean, it feels like, you know, Brex, jump in here, but you were gone. And you only came back because she was gone. And when, you know, that's not magic that I've seen before or have an understanding of, but it seems like a kind of life-for-life trade, you know? And maybe she's off, you know, where people go after they die, I don't know, but, and maybe she's somewhere else and she could come back, but I feel like to get her back, we would need to use the kind of necromancy that we really don't want to get out that she was using. Everyone who was at the university did, obviously she was doing this research there. Was anyone else doing research into this? Did
I'm not saying thesis that we supervisor? Should be looking for her, or that we do want her to bring her back. It felt like her departure was pretty final to me. I'm just saying, people will want to know why we, her friends, her party members, aren't trying everything that we possibly can to bring her back. Which raises more questions. So we have to be prepared for that. And that means, you know, maybe and if we had to give a reason, we have a very solid reason.
That's what I say.
Not to try, but we'd have to share that reason.
I say we say she died. Because that's the quickest way to end the conversation. It stops the conversation.
I agree.
Well, look, people, if we don't tell anyone what fucked up shit she did, they're going to think she's a good person. And if a good person disappears or dies, people are going to mourn them and they're going to expect us to mourn them. And I don't know how good of a job I'm going to do mourning my murderer.
But Prex, are you even going to tell people that you died?
No.
I don't think it's about the telling. I think it's about the... I mean, Prex, you're good at a lot of things, but you're not a great actor. I don't
know. No, I'm sure you were fine.
Prex, it would just have to be for one night.
But it wouldn't, because it would carry on.
No, but are all of you ready to walk into a place where we're going to be honored, and alongside us, it's going to be this big thing of one or another party member died, and it's going to be like Paula is going to get the Chiron treatment. Are we all ready to handle that? To watch Paula mourned in the same way, in the same breath as Chiron, given everything that's happened.
What if? Just workshopping here, right? Because I don't think I could do that. Frankly, don't think I could do that. I don't want to go around and do a big, hey, everyone, turns out she was evil the whole time, or she was evil for the past 10 years. She was mad with grief, whatever the fuck. I don't think we need to justify anything she did. I think it needs to be, hey, we found out very quickly that she had meddled with
things that must not be.
We just say weird magic. We say shit that must not be. We call on the phrases of your gods. We do that. And then we're like, hey, this happened. We're all torn up about it, but not for the reasons you think. We're not mourning her. We're mourning the friend we obviously lost many years ago when she went down this road. And we keep it vague. We say it was a monster of some sort. She was fucking with weird magic. And she died in the process.
Maybe we just say that she was brainwashed or mind controlled.
I think that gives her more grace than she deserves. Personally. I'm one of six here, so.
No.
Well, if we're going to give her more grace than she deserves, couldn't we just say she's, like, fine and, like, just didn't want to come to the party? Wanted some time alone?
Naraya laughs into her sundae that she's eating.
Just went on vacation?
I worry that ship has sailed, Rex.
Yeah, because the guild and everything, she's not coming back. Unless she does come back and she's even worse, in which case I'll be happy to fight her again.
Wait, Esther, you've been in touch with the guild, right? What have they been saying or asking about?
Well, A, they were asking who to look to or who to trust.
And you said you, of course.
Well, I'm trustworthy.
Yeah. No, you are.
No,
you are.
No,
are you the boss of the guild now?
No, I do not want to be the boss of the guild. No. They didn't know what happened with Paula. And I said I didn't know either. And they are still somewhat in a state of confusion. And I have been trying as much as possible to give them as little information as I can until we had this conversation about what to do.
And I can say, Esther, I think that your point of contact probably would have been Primo Crugnail. I think he actually ended up like the most senior person on that staff at that point.
Oh, God.
Sorry, who? Who? Does Esther know who that is?
Well, it was tough to remember his name, and you're not sure you could recall it now, but at the time you did know it for a few days. And his primary concern was he didn't want unnecessary... Like, when you were helping with PR, a lot of what he wanted out of your PR expertise was, like, spinning it so that as little got out as possible. He's like a very private person, and I think given everything that had happened, he really wanted the guild to, like, maintain its image and not have anybody know anything weird went on.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of using the guild's sort of doing, like, please respect our privacy at this time. Understanding that it was, like, the celebration or the reunion of this very specific tragic event, and then another seemingly tragic event happened, and maybe more of Esther's PR work was, like, not killing, but silencing reporters. Maybe, like, bribing reporters off. Like, just getting it, like, just hold, trying to hold it down for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Until, like, a statement.
Yeah, and I think even keeping it, like, so that the reporters wouldn't even necessarily know that there was anything to even go up there for. Because it's relatively isolated, right? And I think Primo being in, like, we gotta fence off the area kind of, like, you know, mode. I think that was sort of his response would be, like, we have to fence off the area, close ranks. Like, anything weird that happened here, the more people know about it, the more likely it could happen again. Like, that's just, that was his sense of not trusting anybody, which, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't trust anybody either after I had been brainwashed by somebody, but...
But Paula wasn't even the most important person that the guild lost. You know, there were two more senior people who died that day, and... True. It's pretty easy to kind of be like,
right,
we lost Kyrelius and Willa, and then, you know, Paula stepped up and then we lost her too. It's easy to spin as a kind of general tragedy without maybe necessarily getting into the dinosaurs of it all.
I mean, is it possible just to say that the guild is trying to handle it internally?
Guess that's a band-aid.
You're still gonna...
I think
it's still going to time for our reactions, right?
The fact of the matter is...
Show up and perform in a way, right? Sorry, go ahead, Esther.
No, that's exactly it, Naraya. That no matter what we come up with right now, tomorrow there's going to be a lot of really nosy, gossip-driven people asking questions. And again, I'm just being honest. It's really nice that you've all come this way. You don't have to come to this gala. I so appreciate the support, and I think it would be... a beautiful coming together, but again, it's your decision. My point is that we can come up with whatever we want right now, but people are going to ask questions. So really, we all need to figure out for ourselves, individually, how you're going to get through talking about Porla. There's a version of Porla I can mourn and be honest and be truthful that I am missing Porla. That's my truth. That's what I feel comfortable standing by and defending. But all of us tomorrow at some point will be backed into a corner and have to figure out for ourselves how to get through that with some version of honesty, because that's the easiest way to cut through it, because these motherfuckers love lies and can smell them out in a second.
Well, that gives me a stomachache just thinking about it. Although it might be because
a lot of cheesecake.
I remember that I'm a little lactose intolerant, and that's why I haven't had this dessert in so long. It's really good, though. But if we could work out just some, like script, even just a basic adage that we stick to... That would help me out a lot, whether I go to the gala or not. I'm still kind of undecided. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm also not great under social pressure. So, yeah.
It sounds like we have to go as close to the truth as we can without...
Big monster, fucked up magic, she got tangled in it. We're very sad. But not for the reasons you think. I lose it halfway through because it's very hard for me to be kind about this.
What if they ask questions about the monster?
Big dragon-looking thing. I don't fucking know.
That's true. Dragon.
It is a big dragon-looking thing.
People know dragons. They don't ask questions about dragons.
Like, fucked up dragon.
Wings and teeth and...
Big.
Yeah. Vicious.
Yeah, that's true. And we know that dragons are smart and manipulative. And
we could just say it was a fucked up dragon.
Kind of was. I mean, I wasn't there, but yeah, it kind of seems like it might have been, yeah.
I mean, if we're not going full truth with it, then I think that's the best, mostly captures the essence of it. Lie? I don't know, I'm not good with this.
Sounds good to me.
I think the mourning
the mourning of the version of her that we want to mourn will have to be private.
Mm.
Because there are so many layers to understanding why. I don't think I can mourn a version of her in public because I will end up telling people. And I don't think people are ready to be told.
So you're saying we should tell people that it was a weird, fucked up dragon and yeah, Porla was working with it?
I think that's good enough, right?
And she lost her life like any evil minion would.
She was a part of the dragon's plan.
I guess that's technically true.
Being manipulated by something bigger and older than you to doing something that you think is right, then you realize is wrong when your old friends come back into the picture. You know, that's a winning story, I guess.
Can we just stick with
it, though? For the Estas of the world.
Do we want to continue this conversation, or do we, like, and summarize it, or, like, put a button on it, or what do you think?
Esther, you're at a high charisma. Summarize this shit. What are we saying?
We're saying that Porla was manipulated by this very powerful, dark, magic, something, dragon, and we don't entirely know what her plan or its plan was. But it took us to this other plane. We had to fight it. Eventually, Porla was able to realize her wrongs, tried to help us, died in the process, disappeared in the process.
Missing, presumed dead.
Missing, presumed dead. We were transported back to our plane. Porla and this beast were not. How do we feel?
I think I can
workable
handle yeah, that.
Windswip, is it going to make you uncomfortable if we call you Windswip Dragon Slayer?
Oh my god, yes. Oh no.
Yes, uncomfortable, or yes, you would like that?
No, it would make me very, very uncomfortable because it's a lie, and that kind of thing can spread like fire. And if I ever were to, publish anything about dinosaurs in the future, distant future, then I would have to retract that title, but by then it would have probably, I don't know, it feels weird. It feels weird, but thank you for thinking of me. I'm good with saying it was a team effort.
We all fought a beast. We got out mostly fine.
Kind of look to Brex.
I was there.
Brex was there.
I was there. I was there the whole time. I helped.
Brex was there the whole time.
Brex fought valiantly the whole time. And,
maybe a little memory loss. Hit your head. Memory loss. I don't know how far we're going with this lie. I don't know. That's you. That's up to you.
Yeah, maybe we'll just don't try to give anyone a play-by-play because that can get tricky.
Sure. Yeah. I'm good with that. Yes. For now. Yes.
Great. Now, have you all heard of karaoke?
Why is that relevant?
Because I have the perfect way for us to get this all out of our system and to get prepared for tomorrow night. I think we just need a bit of fuck you fun. So maybe we all put on something nice, go hop in the streetcar, maybe head on down to this fun little karaoke spot. I'm seeing ambivalent faces from everyone.
Still not sure what karaoke is, but I will go downtown and party.
Oh, Naraya, it's about to blow your mind.
Kit takes out a bottle of sake and just slams it on the table.
Takes it out of where?
Yes!
It's just always around.
Yes!
He's got monk robes with deep pockets, and there's just always sake in there.
It's like women in, like, laundry detergent ads. It's just there all the time. Yep,
exactly.
Esther, what is your passive perception?
Oh, Lord.
That's a great question. Oh, great question.
Oh, no. Oh,
yay, we're doing karaoke. What's your passive perception?
12.
Cool,
dude.
God damn it.
Not the cool and then the very casual sip of...
Oh, that's my least favorite.
Okay. Everyone put on something nice, fun, and a little flirty. We're going out in 30 minutes. We can continue this conversation at this spot. They always have a room reserved for me. It's going to be a great time, I promise.
karaoke though.
You're just gonna see it. You just gotta see it. Just trust me.
Is it like a different type of?
Just trust me. Alcohol? Too many questions. Everyone, go get nice.
Okay.
I like start shoving people away from the food.
All right. And as you go out, you do find out what karaoke is. You take the streetcar into the city to the karaoke spot where Esther always has a room reserved always. It's a private room. And on what we would consider a screen is a series of leaves that are sort of woven together. And they light up and display karaoke lyrics. And you have a wonderful time. Everybody sings an amazing song. Maybe in bonus content we can reveal what everybody's saying. And as you're all leaving, Esther, you realize that you forgot your jacket in the karaoke room. And you're gonna just run back and grab it.
Okay.
You think something?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I just give me 1 second, everyone. And I'll run back in.
You enter the room again. And give me a perception check.
Okay, first roll. Feeling first,
I just remembered that we're playing D&D.
Well,
oh, man.
Surprise.
That perception check has Nikki Nenkov written all over it, and I'm stressed.
How dare you?
That'll be a 7.
Oh, good.
Good. Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, good. Good times.
The first roll of season 1 was also pretty bad, if I recall. So.
You thought for just a second that you saw the screen turn back on and say, see you tomorrow. But then it was gone and you're like, well, maybe that's just this. They probably do that. I don't know. They want you to come back tomorrow.
God, Kitsake is so strong. Why do I drink it every time? Is my jacket there?
Yeah.
Okay. I get the jacket. Maybe I'll just go over to the leaves, the screen of leaves, and maybe just do like a quick arcana check on it.
Sure, yeah.
Great. Just, yeah, another 7. Wow, look at that.
So, you know, here's what you know. So this technology that allows the leaves to essentially like light up as screens is something that it was invented within your lifetime. You were probably like, God, I don't know, like 10 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maybe a little older than that. Maybe like middle school age, when this started being a thing. And you feel like you should know more about it because your family is heavily involved in the sort of production and manufacture and development of this technology.
Mm-hmm.
But you're drunk right now. And also it's very confusing. It has something to do with like mirror, magical fiber optic mirrors running through leaves, like the stems of the leaves, but it's like wires, and you just are like gonna throw up if you think about it too hard. So it just is beyond you.
Okay, great. Oh, I'm using my brain too hard. Gonna puke. All right. And I kind of stumble back out of the private room. Say goodbye to Nico, the karaoke owner, as I go.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. We'll see you soon. I know we will. You bring your friends back.
I'll see you around.
Because you know what? You always say you want that 6-person room. And I say, you know, Mr. Miffy, and it's always just you. But you know what? You came through tonight.
Nico, I am a human full of surprises. So you're welcome.
I'm a lizard guy.
You're crazy. Nico, you're crazy.
No, you're crazy.
No, you're crazy.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. All right.
Is there anything anybody else wants to do while we're downtown, or are we ready to call it a night? What do you think?
So, is there like a newsstand open somewhere?
Yeah, I think as you walk out onto the street, there is a newsstand, and I think it's kind of a traditional looking newsstand, if not a little bit rustic. I think that a lot of stuff here is, rather than built out of like wood planks, like refined like lumber, it's as much as possible built out of like reclaimed wood, even like bundles of twigs and stuff that wouldn't necessarily be structurally super sound, but is kind of reinforced through magic so that they can like get the most out of it. So it's almost like a little like hut, but then also across the top there's like a string of palm leaves that, you know, are just sort of blinking like, you know, news.
So
hot dogs.
I
cigarettes.
I
sorry I introduced tobacco into my perfect world, guys. But you know what? Some people want that there in a perfect world, so
I look at Esther and I say,
I'm gonna go. I think we need a little bit of intel before tomorrow. So I go to the newsstand, and do I see any tabloids?
Oh my god, make an investigation check with disadvantage because it's nighttime and you're drunk.
Okay, fine. A six.
Nailing it so far. You're so close to a triple seven. We almost got some kind of jackpot.
Yeah, it's really you see there are things, but they're behind the guy selling things, and he looks really mean and like he wants you to leave because you're drunk, and it just feels like really intimidating to ask to like get something from behind the counter at this point.
I feel really awkward about this, so I decide that I'm just gonna buy a pack of gum and leave.
All right, you buy a pack of gum and the guy like grunts at you and is just like pleased to see you leave, but it's good gum.
I like how you could have just put tabloids behind like a locked pane of glass, or just like he didn't find them, but you knew that the perfect thing to discourage Kit was just a mean salesperson.
Honestly, peek behind the curtain here. That was my knee-jerk reaction of what would prevent me from following through on a transaction I had planned to make. Would be like, there is a single slightly awkward obstacle that I would have to, no, absolutely not.
It's great.
All right. You all wait around for the streetcar, and it arrives because they run all evening because it is a perfect city. And you ride home without incident. You get up into your beds without incident. And you all turn in for a lovely night's sleep, dreaming about karaoke and sake and all of the horrible conversations you're going to have in a couple days when you go to this party. Aveline.
Hi.
You open your eyes and you're in what appears to be a completely desolate, barren gray landscape as far as the eye can see, just flat, no features other than a rolling smoky mist across the ground.
Is this a dream? Is this somewhere I recognize? Because I don't dream.
I'm not gonna make you make a check. I think at this point you know that this is what it feels like when you're receiving a vision.
Okay, so this is a like familiar, strange space that I have not been to exactly before, but like something about it feels admonition-y.
Yes, you don't believe you've been to this particular like geographical location before, but you do get the feel, the distinct impression, like you know you're having a vision. Like you know you don't dream, you know this isn't real, like it's a vision, this is what they feel like. And part of your suspicion, and certainly why you have it, is confirmed when you look to your left and you see admonition walking away from you.
I follow. I don't think I say anything.
You start walking a few paces behind admonition, and after a few minutes of silent following, admonition walks through a particularly tall and thick cloud of this misty smoke. And you walk through the cloud as well. And as you emerge on the other side, you see that Admonition is no longer alone. Admonition is walking alongside Chiron. And they're both walking away from you.
I think I stop in my tracks and then not recoil in shock, but there's like a physical kind of jolt. And I think I'm used to kind of just following along in these visions and just being shown what I'm supposed to see, and I would expect that this is the first time anyone other than Admonition has shown up in one of these, which is really throwing me for a loop. And I think I just blurt out Chiron's name.
Chiron turns around and looks at you and doesn't say anything. She just smiles, and then she turns back around and continues walking with Admonition.
I don't run up to her, but I definitely, like, quicken my pace and try and see if I can catch up with her and, like, grab her hand.
All right, give me a dexterity check. Actually, no, give me a dexterity saving throw.
That's a big ol' seven. We're rolling great here tonight with the...
If we were in Vegas, things would be great. Unfortunately, we're in a horrible vision, so... Well, I mean, it seems like you're not having a good time. If you were, like, really stoked, I would be like, you're having a dope vision.
I'm having a confusing vision.
a confusing vision. You start to run up to them, and almost right away, you trip and you faceplant into this layer of kind of like hazy smoke. And you feel like that thing you tripped over was actually like kind of big. It was just completely covered by the smoke, but you're not exactly sure immediately what it was.
Can I touch it? Can I try and feel like the texture of what I'm lying on as I'm like putting my hands in front of me to...
Yeah. You realize as you put your hands down that you're touching something that feels cold and scaly and dry, and you can feel it moving and pulsating under its skin like muscles.
Oh, I hate this. Yep, I'm gonna scramble up to my feet and keep trying to catch up with them.
Well, you keep trying to catch up with them, and you keep repeatedly falling. And every time you fall, you get a slightly better glimpse of this thing that you're tripping over, which it becomes clear to you over a series of stumbles and falls, is a very, very long and wide serpent that is coiling through the mist. And you can almost make out its head, and it's getting closer and closer to Admonition and Chiron. And as you look back, you can see that it's infinitely long, and you're looking for where it ends, and you can't tell where it's coming from. But it appears to just keep coming and go on forever. And then you wake up from your vision.
I grab my head and like groan, and I keep like a notebook or a little kind of pen and parchment situation next to my bed to write down visions. So I write down as much as I can about the feel of this serpent and the smoke and how I felt in this moment and Chiron's face. Apolline's not a great artist, but I'm going to try and sketch what I remember of her from the vision.
Nice. When was the last time you had a vision like this? I know that you had been talking a little bit about your relationship changing over the years with Admonition giving you these visions of what should not be and how you act towards them. How has that been more recently?
The Nat 20 religion check that I got in the Paula fight was kind of vision-y, but I was awake, so it was more like a sort of answer to a prayer that kind of came into my head. I think I haven't had one of these in my sleep, kind of being told something for a good couple of years. And the last time I did, it was probably something to do with someone in the village that I was trying to heal, and maybe a kind of message of like, it's time to let go. The thing that is meant to be here is that this, it's his time. So I think I'm used to having these kind of weird, like, okay, it's time to let go moments. And this didn't, I haven't had one for a while, and this didn't feel like that, because what the fuck was Chiron doing there? Yeah, I think I'm really confused and don't know what to make of this at all.
Okay. How do you proceed? Do you go back to sleep, or?
What time is it?
Well, I don't know. Let me roll a dice. This is my first dice roll, is to see what time it is.
Nice.
It is 4:10 in the morning.
I'm going to try and get a little bit more sleep, because I know we have this big party thing coming up this afternoon, and I'm going to need my strength of mind to deal with 150 Estes, but worse.
And you do find that you are able to get a few more winks. No more crazy visions, no dreams, obviously. I don't know if it's the world's deepest, most relaxing sleep after the experience you've had, but it certainly is sleep. And outside the window, as Addie curls up on your chest and cuddles you, the sun slowly rises over Skylark. A new day dawns over the City of Reflections, with the reds and purples and pinks of the sunset reflecting off the buildings and into the nearby lake. And that is where we will end our first episode.
Woohoo!